How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. And obviously, we got a lot of stuff to talk about here today, as is normally the case. We've got UFC 158, which took place last night from the Bell Center in Montreal. GSP fighting in the main event against Nick Diaz, a battle for the ages. We're going to talk about this show in detail. I know personally I had 15 people over at my house, maybe even 20. It was packed. Everybody came over, and they came over for one fight. Prelims started at about 5 o'clock, and people started filling in, and for about the first 3 hours, actually, 4 hours, just everybody milling around, talking, eating pizza, kind of paying attention, kind of not paying attention, and then it was time for GSP and Nick Diaz, and my God, everyone shut up and gathered around the television and watched the whole fight. So this was a fight people wanted to see. Obviously, if you've been online, you've seen it all. You've seen Nick Diaz at the press conference being I shouldn't call him a crazy man, but he was something else at the press conference, getting under George St. Pierre's skin. St. Pierre claimed it wasn't bothering him. He claimed he was playing mind games of his own. It was an amazing situation. We're going to talk all about that fight, all the matches at UFC 158, a bunch of welterweight fights as well, setting up the likely next challenger for George St. Pierre, Johnny Hendricks. Getting a big win in the semi-main. We're going to talk about that. And obviously, when we get done with UFC 158, we got a ton of pro wrestling news as well. We'll go over Lockdown, the TNA pay-per-view from last Sunday night, give you all the results of that, how it plays into future storylines. There's a new TNA World Heavyweight Champion, and yes, his name is Bully Ray. Did the heel turn pretty much as everybody expected at that show, so we'll tell you all about that. Plus, Raw from Monday night. We got WrestleMania coming up in 3 weeks, so obviously, a lot of stuff to talk about in terms of WWE's biggest show of the year. So, back in just a moment, everybody. We'll kick it off. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And last night, UFC 158 from the Bell Center in Montreal. It was George St. Pierre versus Nick Diaz in the main event. If you put money on Nick Diaz, well, I don't know what to tell you, except that you didn't win any money here. George St. Pierre beat him on the scorecards all 5 rounds. 50-45, George St. Pierre. It was an interesting fight in the sense that St. Pierre started to get tired in about the third round, and Diaz had a chance. Unfortunately, he didn't capitalize at all on the opportunity. George ended up beating him all 5 rounds, getting a decision. Tough fight for George St. Pierre, however. And Mike, your thoughts on the main event of 158?
I put money on Nick Diaz.
Did you? You were the only one, actually, when we had the ongoing Wrestler Observer picks and preview that Josh Nason puts up. You were the only guy that picked Nick Diaz. Tell us why.
Well, really, it was just kind of throwing it out there as an upset because, well, it's really easy to pick to predict a George St. Pierre fight because it would go exactly like this one. He goes out there and takes the guy down and dominates them and smothers them and does an incredible job at it and is the incredible sportsman and that he doesn't try to hurt them, but he dominates and wins. And I just figured, okay, if this is going to happen, if you're going to see George St. Pierre lose, I mean, Nick Diaz would be the perfect foil for him, and maybe I got too dragged into all the pre-fight hype leading up to it, but I didn't think George St. Pierre was going to be that effective in striking with Nick Diaz. Obviously, he's bigger than Diaz. He's just as physically imposing as Diaz is. You know, a lot of times Diaz gets, it's not like a Wanderlei Silva thing in Pride, but, you know, Diaz is physically bigger than a lot of the guys he goes out there and faces, and he didn't have that with GSP, and GSP really rocked him with some shots. Those Superman jabs and those Superman punches really threw Nick off of his game, And I thought Nick was going to be far better from his back. And obviously he was very good in that, you know, every time Georges St. Pierre took him down, it wasn't like he was in great danger of being submitted or being knocked out or being, you know, ground down by Georges. But still, he was just unable to get any offense going whatsoever. And that was a real, real surprise to me, the way it actually, you know, went that way. Where Nick was just basically impotent, and it was really, you know, thank God for the semi-main event and a couple other things on the show, because that was really, in some ways, a very disappointing ending to what was such a amazingly hyped-up show. And realistically, I guess, as great as the pre-fight build was, it was going to be tough for the main event to top it, but I was really surprised with the way it was. You know, I guess I'm not surprised that it was so one-sided, but I thought Nick was going to be able to get something in on Georges, and he got nothing in on Georges.
You know, the after the fight, they do the post-fight interview and that sort of thing, and as soon as the fight's over, I mean, Nick Diaz raised Georges St. Pierre's hand because it was pretty obvious he'd just been destroyed. But they go to interview Georges, and he puts over Nick, and he talks about how he's a big fan of Diaz, and they squash their beef and that sort of thing. And Nick still had some things to complain about, as one would expect. But the funniest thing in a week of really funny things with Nick Diaz is he says he knew everything I was going to do. I don't know how. And listen, I'm not the best in the world when it comes to fight picks, although I've done a lot better this year than I did last year. And I didn't pick everything right on this show, but I predicted almost exactly how this main event was going to go. And I was surprised a little bit. Georges did stand with him more than I expected, and Nick did stuff a couple of takedowns, so I did not expect that. But other than that, this fight went exactly as I had expected. I had expected it to be kind of a main event version, a heavier version of the Ben Henderson-Nate Diaz fight. I just thought that Georges is going to take him down, and Nick won't be able to stop the takedown. Georges is going to control him on the ground. He's not going to get submitted. He's not going to be in much danger. And it went pretty much exactly like that. Nick is going to flip him off or be a numbskull in the middle of the fight. It all happened. Actually, he didn't flip him off at all, but he was kind of a numbskull. But the thing with Diaz is like, and other people have mentioned this before, it's like Nick Diaz is really good, and Georges put him over. He said he's the best boxer in mixed martial arts. He's amazing at jiu-jitsu. He put over Nick real big. But I think the thing with Diaz is like, you know exactly what he's going to do. You know what I mean? You know exactly what he's going to do. And Georges went in there, and I love that Nick was just baffled. How did he know what I was going to do? I don't get it. Well, you fight the exact same way every single time. You do the exact same thing every time you're in there. And aside from the fact that, as Georges mentioned, there aren't a lot of guys that fight like you, so it was impossible to find a training partner like Nick Diaz, which, by the way, sounds like a fact. Where do you ever find another Nick Diaz? But, you know, you watch some Nick Diaz fights, and they had a perfect strategy. The only problem that Georges had was he got tired there in the last couple of rounds. But I don't know. I applaud you for picking Nick, but I don't know. I was not surprised one bit with how this fight went.
No, and the way to beat Nick too is be the best Georges you can be, and that's exactly what he was. I mean, yeah, he did get a little bit tired, and Nick did start to stuff the takedowns, but again, it's not like Nick was able to get any offense out of Georges whatsoever, and you know, I really expected Nick's jiu-jitsu to be a little bit stronger when St. Pierre, you know, St. Pierre was going to take him down. I mean, of course, that's what was going to happen. But it was Georges is just so smothering, and it was just so relentless that nothing. He had nothing. And then, you know, Goldberg said in the last rounds, like, Nick, you wanted this fight. Now's your time to go for it. And he just could not go for it. And the Johnny Hendricks Georges St. Pierre fight, I don't think either one of them barely missed a takedown, if they did at all, between the two of them tonight. And, you know, the explosiveness of Hendricks' power, I know there's going to be a lot of people, because of the way Georges St. Pierre fights and because of the blowback that he gets, where there's people that just want to see him fight Anderson Silva because they're sick of seeing him fight, you know, his type of fight and these types of fights that are very successful. and very fruitful for him, but sometimes are, you know, a little less than exciting to watch as a fan. But still, I mean, I would still rather see Hendricks GSP first. That to me is, it's more interesting and more fun. And yeah, it may end up being just the exact same way this one was, but I'd still rather see that, I think, than see GSP and Silva, because I know people are going to be, you know, beating down the door for that.
Johnny Hendricks in the semi-main beat Carlos Condit via decision, 29-28 for Hendricks. And what was your score for that fight?
29-28 Hendricks. I had him winning the first two and losing that last round, but it obviously was the fight of the night, and it could very well have been the fight of the year. Just a classic blood and guts knockdown drag out fight.
You know, I don't want to jump to conclusions here, but I got to say something. When they were out there, Hendricks and Condit, I thought Hendrick took the first two rounds, and I thought Condit took the last round. So I had it 29-28 Hendricks as well. And they go to read the scores, and both guys are standing there, and they both, I guess, expect that they won the fight. And as soon as Buffer said unanimous decision, Carlos dropped his hands and put his head down and looked agitated. And I was baffled. And I think, I could be wrong, again, I hate to jump to conclusions, but I'm gonna, because I have no other explanation for this reaction. I don't think Carlos Condit understands what a split decision is and a unanimous decision. A unanimous decision is merely all three judges agreeing. It is not, like, for example, if all three judges give it 29-28 for one guy, they all agree, that's unanimous. Even if one guy won two rounds and one guy won one round. One guy winning two rounds and one guy winning one round, that's not a split decision. A split decision is when there's disagreement among the judges. So I think Condit thought, I guess in his head, when he heard unanimous decision, in his head he thought the judges thought Hendricks won all three rounds. Ridiculous! Because he must have known he lost at least one round, you know what I mean? Maybe two. So I was just baffled that you could be a pro fighter and not understand what a unanimous decision and a split decision is. But we'll talk more about this after the break. I could be reading too much into this, but I couldn't understand his reaction. Anyway, back in a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and, of course, streaming live worldwide on the internet on our website, WrestlingObserver.com. And we're talking UFC 158 here on the program, and the Carlos Condit-Johnny Hendricks match. If you had to make a prediction right now, Mike, Johnny Hendricks or GSP, who takes that fight?
GSP. Because it's still hard to bet against GSP. GSP and Aldo and Anderson Silva, I mean, it's just really difficult to pick against those guys right now. And, again, Hendricks with that hand, and George St. Pierre can be knocked out. He can be hit. But, again, he's just physically bigger than Hendricks, and I know it's going to be a somewhat of a battle of wrestling, and, you know, Hendricks is not super chinned. You know, he's got a lot of power, but it's not like he can't be knocked out either, and I don't expect George St. Pierre to really do that, but with his ability to land punches and use his size, it's tough not to say it's going to be George St. Pierre. Now, where it will be interesting is, obviously, GSP facing off against a really good wrestler, and it's the fact that strategy, he's going to have to amend that strategy. But, you know, with his camp and with the way that he trains and, you know, his nutrition and the whole nine yards, you know, as far as then you go, well, who's going to adapt better? And, again, until somebody proves otherwise, it's really hard realistically to go against George St. Pierre.
I did like this show in the sense that George St. Pierre, he did show some weakness, and that was that he started to tire. I think he first started looking at the clock in the third round, and he had problems taking down Nick Diaz, which if you watch the first round he took the dude down with ease. He started to get tired, and all of a sudden he wasn't taking the guy down with ease. He did still get some takedowns later on, but it was more of a battle. And obviously he'd have the height advantage, he'd have the reach advantage. If he can stay out of range, he'd probably be all right with Hendricks. But I mean, if Hendricks starts getting in there and landing hard shots and GSP can't take him down, he could be in big trouble. And Hendricks himself, I mean, obviously looked good in the first two rounds, but by the third round, he was starting to get tired as well. But I did like that we have a fight coming up where there is a weakness in George St. Pierre's game that Johnny Hendricks can capitalize on as a great wrestler. Now, whether everything else George brings to the table just absolutely overwhelms everything else and he's still able to take out Hendricks, I think most people would probably put GSP as the favorite, but it does lead to at least some interesting talk about what happens if George gets tired, starts getting hit, and can't take this guy down.
Well, maybe Nick Diaz figured out something in the post-fight press conference, because as everyone heard afterward, he did his, you know, typical spiel of, you know, even he didn't know what was going on, and he can't believe George was able to stop him. But you know what? He's kind of tired with mixed martial arts. He didn't like the way the whole thing's got to go, and he was going to retire. And then in the post-fight press conference, he says he'd like to retire, but he'd also like a rematch because George St. Pierre hits like a woman.
Yeah, he was crying about that, how George, I can't say the word that he used in regards to how George hit, but it was hilarious watching him complain about the strikes of George St. Pierre, and then you see him coming out for the round, and it's like George has a little cut on his head, but that's it, and Nick looks like someone hit him with a bat. So, I don't know. I thought that was funny, as did the announcers, in fact. But it was a fun fight.
Hendricks may be getting George at the right time, too. I mean, you know, again, the fight with Condit was not an easy one for George, too, coming back. Now this fight with Diaz, you never know. I mean, with Hendricks, there's the one thing Hendricks has got going for himself right now is he believes he can beat anybody, and he can knock anybody out. And, it was, again, a good war with Condit, and he got, you know, batted around, but, you know, winning another fight with his confidence way up there, hey, this could be as good of a time as any for Hendricks to jump on George.
Nate Marquardt and Jake Ellenberger, some quick notes from the undercard. Nate Marquardt, I guess we'll see what happens for his future, but he was beaten quick, knocked out, and complained about the finish until he saw it on the big screen, and then it was like, all right, I got knocked out. But 3 minutes for Jake Ellenberger. So I guess probably looks like Hendricks obviously is getting the next shot, but Ellenberger looked very good, and it was a good night. It was a good night for Ellenberger, and with everybody on the bubble, I don't know if they'll cut Nate Marquardt, but certainly anybody that lost on this show that was finished, there's certainly a possibility of them being cut, and probably anybody that lost a decision in a non-exciting fight as well.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if it's, you know, because it was his first, you know, dropping down to one side. Maybe you do Marquardt and Diaz if Diaz doesn't fail his post-fight drug test, because you're going to do Condit. You got Hendricks, GSP, and you have Condit and Rory McDonald. You know, Ellenberger, I'm sure, I don't know where you navigate him, but it's probably not going to be Diaz. And I don't know if you do Diaz and Marquardt then some sort of loser leaves town match.
What did you think of all the Diaz hyperbole, his wolf ticket speech and everything like that over the course of the past week? I mean, it's Nick Diaz, obviously an interesting fella, drummed up a lot of interest in the fight. We had Lance Storm on the show a couple of days ago, and he was uncomfortable watching it. He felt that he was watching somebody that had some serious mental issues. What are your thoughts on Nick Diaz and just the press conference stuff, the missing the open workout stuff, the just being Nick Diaz stuff? What are your thoughts?
It's kind of scary a pro wrestler could say that about someone, but...
Well, it's Lance. He's a straight shooter.
I don't know. Nick Diaz, you don't need a zillion Nick Diazes out there, but, you know, you've met and talked to a lot of fighters, and some of them are just, they're weird, they are tightly packed, they are just in their own world, and Nick Diaz is in his own world. I mean, he will leave from this and go probably, you know, obviously he's banged up, so he'll need his medicinal marijuana, and he'll have his triathlons and do all that sort of stuff, and he's just going to be Nick Diaz. And I don't, you know, obviously you just don't know. And he's always been like this, as far as I can recall, I mean, from way, way back. this is the way he's always been. So I don't think I could say, well, you know, he's this way or that. And obviously, you know, being in the fight business, it's not good for your brain. But I just think that he's just that way. This is the way he's going to be. He'll probably use an honorary kid. He'll probably be an honorary old man. And I just, I don't know. I'm a Nick Diaz fan, and I like his uniqueness and him and his brother and that, you know, for the most part, that whole camp for the most part, you know, I don't have any issue with them whatsoever. But it does get old after a while when you hear the same spiels after the fight and you know, have him no-showing things and skipping things and things like that. And again, I mean, once in a while, well-placed, all that sort of stuff, it's fine. I don't think it's the end of the world. Again, you don't want a bunch of guys doing this, but when you have one doing it, I don't think it's all that bad of a deal. And, I mean, look how well-built this fight was. Look how everything about this, from the commercials to the press conference to everything in between, it was a perfectly built show. And, you know, sometimes the hype is better than the show. Look at all the Mike Tyson fights. Look how boxing was built. Look how wrestling, you know, on pay-per-view is built. MMA is just, it's the same thing. It's talking him into the building. And for anything you want to say about Nick Diaz, he drummed up interest into this fight where, you know, it's probably going to do, who knows, 700,000, 750,000 buys, 800, whatever it's going to do, it's going to do really well. And for anything you want to say after it or about Nick Diaz, he talked him into the building. It was Montreal, so the building didn't exactly need all that much help, but still, you know what I mean.
Where did the term wolf tickets come from originally?
I presumed it was
a boxing term.
I guess I don't know, like the, you know, crying wolf sort of thing. I have no idea. That was a term that I really had not heard before, to be honest. So there was a lot of talk about wolf tickets and, you know, being sold a bill of goods to you know, and I guess that's what it is, you know, crying wolf or whatever it is, to bait people in. And that was the only thing that was a little frustrating with some of the lead up to where, and this happens in UFC a lot, where there seems to be pushing away and the distancing of fighters from the hype leading into the fight or going after each other, any of that stuff. You know, I think people are smart enough and everybody's smart enough to kind of take that kind of stuff for granted. You don't have to, getting beaten over the head with the promotion for the fight. You don't have to immediately always back that up and beat us over the head with the fact that, you know, it's promotion for the fight. We know what it is.
It was amazing during the fight. I mean, George afterwards was very complimentary of Nick Diaz and this and that, but man, I mean, he claimed nothing got to him, but if you watch the press conference, the pre-fight press conference, I mean, I don't know how that wouldn't get to you if you're George St. Pierre, not to mention during the actual fight itself. I think it was maybe the third round, but, you know, the referee calls for a stop. George is standing up out of the dude's guard, and Nick takes a swing at him after the bell. It's like, what are you doing, dude? You know what I mean?
It worked. It worked in the way that, I mean, George, and granted, he was a little bit tired and everything, but still, he started, and again, it's not like he went right into fighting Nick Diaz's fight or anything like that, but, you know, he was taken out of it a little bit, and that was the best thing for Nick to do. You know, he knew he wasn't going to get disqualified for that, but thrown a swat. It was like when he got dominated in the second round and then was, you know, got up afterwards and was just jawing at him and staring at him. As he got pushed away to his corner. I mean, that's just something you do to try to get under somebody's skin.
Let me ask you one more question about Diaz, and we're going to head to a break and move on here with more big UFC news. But I've watched Diaz, and I've always concluded that he's the best in the world at promoting a fight and not realizing he's doing it. Sometimes I wonder, can he really not understand what he's doing?
Yes, I don't think he knows. Sometimes he misses the gravity of it, of certain things that he does. He's not completely blind to it all, but there are some times where, yeah, he doesn't understand the exact gravity of the situation.
I got to talk more about this after the break. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also hear us on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Just go to the App Store. TuneIn Radio app is what it's called. You search for Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer Radio, and you can hear us live every Sunday afternoon. Archives of the show available as well. Also have archives available at WrestlingObserver.com. We also have a subscription area, $10.99 a month. If you love this radio show, for $10.99 a month, you can get radio shows every single day. My goal Monday through Friday is 2 shows a day. One in the morning, one in the evening. And that's not counting the return of the 10-minute afternoon update with all of the latest news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. So that's basically 3 shows every single day as a subscriber. And your $10.99 not only gets you all those new shows Monday through Friday, but all of the shows we do on weekends, including Wrestling Observer Radio with myself and Dave Meltzer after pay-per-views. Just did one last night after Wrestling Observer. I'm sorry, we just did one last night after the UFC 158 pay-per-view. So if you sign up, you not only get access to all of those shows, but every show that we've ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archive. So if you love listening to audio on your commute, if you love listening to it while you work, if you love listening to audio while you work out at the gym or wherever you listen to your audio, WrestlingObserver.com will provide you with more audio than you'll even know what to do with. We've had people try to go through every single show we've ever done. Some people actually have. It's taken them years. So check it out. WrestlingObserver.com. If you scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest 3 free radio shows. You can sample it. Of course, you're listening to a sample right now, but if you want to check it out, you can sample the latest 3 free shows. And if you like what you hear, sign up, because if you do, 10 to 15 brand new radio shows every single week. I've mentioned it many times. If you like this program, I guarantee that you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. Not only all the radio shows, but the Wrestling Observer newsletter and Figure Four Weekly as well. 2 brand new newsletters every single week, plus archives, back issues of the Observer, tons of stuff. So give it a try, everybody. It's only $10.99 a month. Try it once. If you don't like it, you never have to sign up again. But I think if you give it a shot, if you like this show, you may be a subscriber for life. We're talking about Nick Diaz, UFC 158. How can you not talk about Nick Diaz? It's all everybody does leading up to this show, and I'm sure afterwards as well. I have always thought that this is a guy that's just, he's just Nick Diaz. He doesn't understand what he's doing as he's being the most effective guy in the business at selling a pay-per-view at this point. But sometimes I watch him, I watch his behavior, I listen to what he says, and it's like, you know, maybe this dude does know what he's doing. I mean, can he really not know that he's riling up and building interest? I mean, where would Nick Diaz have even heard the term wolf tickets? Why would he have even thought to bring that up? Sometimes I think he's a little smarter than we give him credit for being. But, of course, there are also many times where I believe that I'm a fool for thinking he's smarter than I give him credit for being.
It's, you know, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. I mean, you know, at one point he's still a guy who came up rough, who, you know, always did his own thing and goes to a gym and he trains and then he leaves and, you know, does his own thing. And, you know, there's a bit of being socially awkward. There's a little bit of everything in there. But, you know, when he busted out the line this week, you know, apologizing in advance over the possibility of failing his drug test because he's had a history of them. I mean, that you know, and people were just like, oh, you know, how could he say that? And it's like, well, it was just kind of a tongue-in-cheek, you know, there he was, to me, taking a shot at himself and actually got off a good one. But there are also other times where he'll say something that everybody is just, like, scratching their head at, and he can't understand why those people are scratching their head. Or why they'll ask him about it again because they don't understand what he said. And sometimes there's a level from him where he honestly can't understand why you can't understand him, even though he can't understand exactly what's going on himself. And even though there's moments...
I don't understand really, anything you just said. I'm joking.
Exactly. and there's lucid moments in between that. And again, he's not a dummy. But yeah, I think there's a level of, you know, there are just some things where... he cannot understand why you can't understand him.
The fight of the night, Hendricks and Condit, knockout of the night, Jake Ellenberger. The gate for the show, $3.71 million, 20,145 people in attendance. So there you go.
I disagree with that knockout of the night. There were three really good ones, one on Facebook, one on FX, and I'm kind of surprised that that got it because I actually really liked the Dillashaw one with Tamura where Dillashaw faked like he was going to go shooting in, and it, you know, Tamura dropped his head and was basically kind of getting out of the way and was looking directly down on the mat, and Dillashaw went up with what looked like it was going to be a kick and actually drilled him with a knee in the face. It knocked him out, and there was another one a little bit later on the, I think it was Rick Story. Again, that was another really good knockout too, and granted it wasn't on the pay-per-view, but I thought they were almost even more impressive than the Ellenberger one.
In other big UFC news, it was announced that the next season of Ultimate Fighter is going to be coached by Ronda Rousey and the winner of the upcoming Kat Zingano versus Miesha Tate fight, which is coming up in April. And I believe it's Kat Zingano. I always screw up that last name, as does apparently everybody else, so I'm not alone. But that's going to be the coaches for the next season of Ultimate Fighter. It's going to be 135-pounders, men and women in the same house together. They are desperate to turn this show around at this point. That's going to be something else.
It is. And just another welterweight note from last night's show, Jordan Mayne. Looked awesome. he big knockout over Dan Miller, and that was incredibly impressive as well too. But yeah, they announced the Ultimate Fighter, whatever it is now, with season 18 that they're technically up to. With Joe Rogan mugging at the camera, they announced that it was going to happen at the end of the FX prelims, and it got me. You know, I don't know how long I'll watch for, but I had really had zero interest in this year whatsoever. I had tried to have some interest in the two seasons ago, and I couldn't get into it and faded out after a couple weeks. And this one I didn't bother with at all. But having both of the, both sexes in the house and having female coaches, it's certainly going to be train wrecky and interesting, and I'm sure if nothing else, the bumpers they have, the teases they have from week to week ought to be something else.
I should note that while George St. Pierre did not, he obviously, his face looked better than Diaz's in the fight. If you saw the post-fight press conference, his face was massacred. So he did take a beating, but it was mostly probably that fifth round. He looked none the worse for wear for about the first three, but then after about round four and five, it was starting to not look good. He's ready to take a vacation to a tropical area and forget about my crazy life, he said. The Ultimate Fighter, since we're on the subject, funny you should mention not getting into this season. This was a season where I guess the idea was all going to turn around. It's going to be on Tuesday nights. We're having John Jones and Chael Sonnen as the coaches. And I don't know if it's just because there has not been any fireworks between the two. They've got along famously, so to speak. They're actually sort of kind of friends. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe the problem is that nothing can be done to save this program. But I don't hear much about it at all. I don't hear people talking about it. I mean, it's obviously taking place. Obviously, the ratings aren't. I mean, they're better than they were on Friday nights, but still, it's not something people are talking about. And what are your thoughts on? I mean, obviously, as you noted, you're gonna start watching this next season with the women, Ronda Rousey and the Kat versus Tate winner. But I don't know. Do you feel that? I mean, will even something like that save this show, or is it just has the show run its course? It kind of feels that way.
Yeah, I thought it has for a while, and I think when you look at the HBO 24/7s, if you had a chance to see the Fight Factory shows on the whatever it was, Nuevo, the Spanish language Fox station, that's the direction I think they should go, and I think there's a way to build to each show. over the course of, what, 13 weeks or whatever the Ultimate Fighter is, where you're focusing mostly on the two main event people, but you also can focus on, you know, different teams and groups and other fights on the show and kind of intermingle all of that in. I mean, they have the capabilities to do it. They're not HBO, but the video packages and promos that they can put together can be fantastic and are always very good. And I think they should actually take it to that direction, because at the end of the day, even though I'm going to watch it, I don't really like train wreck style programming and that over the top stuff. And you know, you're going to have alcohol, you're going to have mixed sexes, you're going to have, I mean, it's, and again, not that, you know, I just, the whole thing is being set up to be, you know, I don't want to say creepy or anything like that, but you're waiting for the train wreck. You're waiting for something bad to happen. And that's, you know, it takes away from the fights. And I know people watch this stuff, and hey, it probably, if it works, then it works, and I really can't say anything about it, because you're using it as a promotional vehicle for your company. But with that said, I think that there's better ways to do it. And I think because of the successes of some of these other shows, I think there's a way you can tie it together and just put a new spin on the show. And again, it's not going to be on FX now. It's going to be on Fox Sports One. And they're going to try to go.
Actually, I think this next season is still FX.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's right. So this station is still FX, which, I mean, right there, I think you want to put a better foot forward than just have that sort of, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I think taking that approach of that 24/7 style, where you just focus on more than just the main event and you fit people in over the span of 13 weeks, I really think you can build up enough stories and get people into it just with that stuff, not with the lowest common denominator type of programming.
I just think with the number of fighters they have under contract, I mean, what purpose does Ultimate Fighter really serve at this point? I mean, we mentioned this years ago, actually. I mean, the first season was great because you had all these undiscovered great fighters. But now, if you're a good fighter, you're probably already in UFC, or you're in Bellator, or you're in World Series of Fighting, or wherever people are fighting these days. And the talent, the undiscovered talent, I mean, I don't care how good, I've said this a million times, I don't care how good you are on the regional circuit, I don't care how much of a world beater you are in the gym, it's a different level at UFC, because the absolute cream of the crop is in UFC at the top right now. And the guys coming off Ultimate Fighter, I mean, they're guys that maybe they're winning some fights in the prelims. You know, the last guy out of Ultimate Fighter, I think, that's really done extremely well for himself was, you know, like Roy Nelson, who is, because he was a ringer, you know, that was his ticket into UFC. He'd been a hell of a fighter before he'd been on Ultimate Fighter. So it's like a competition to bring in a guy who's going to be a prelim fighter. And I think everybody knows that now. And I don't see the incentive to watch the show if that's kind of what, I guess it builds up the coaches' rivalry. But do we really need 13 weeks of Ultimate Fighter to build up a rivalry between Chael Sonnen and John Jones? Like you said, you could do that on a 24/7 style special. But we're going to head to a break. When we come back, I'll get your thoughts on this, Mike. And so we shall return. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are talking about the Ultimate Fighter here in this short segment prior to our hourly break. And Mike, before the commercial, talking about what purpose does Ultimate Fighter even serve at this point? And any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, it doesn't serve much when you're trying to build up pay-per-view draws and network draws and just, you know, a new wave of stars for your company. I know that the line in the UFC is, well, this gives, you know, it's a great chance for young fighters. And it is. I mean, no doubt about that. It absolutely is. And for those guys, they'd probably be very unhappy because there would be a show on a major cable network that would be going away for them. But with that said, if I'm UFC, I'm trying to build up personalities and get people involved and invested into buying into, you know, fighter X, Y, and Z, you know, whether it be say, a Phil Davis or somebody like that who's featured on the undercard of, you know, pick your fight. I mean, to me, you know, getting those personalities across and trying to build up guys like that, the next, you know, level of guys, you know, Chris Weidman or something like that, just focus on that and trying to build up those guys instead of, you know, a influx of new guys who are going to come in and show up on a card and half of them will end up getting cut, you know, after they lose their first fight. I think it's a better idea, and it would be, to me, it's just a classier way to do things, too. Again, a lot of it for me comes down to that 24/7 style, the 30-for-30 ESPN style against a MTV reality show style and a lowest common denominator style, and I think it had its time once, and there's been some successes to come out of it, but to me, it's completely run its course and is not interesting whatsoever.
All right, we're going to do a break. When we come back, pro wrestling. We got so much stuff to talk about, and in fact, as a tease, after the hourly break, we're going to tell the story, and it's a pro wrestling MMA tie-in story, of how Vince McMahon wanted to fight Dana White at WrestleMania. True story. I'm going to tell you all about it after the break, how it almost came about, how it didn't come about, and more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, available on the TuneIn Radio app, searching Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer Live. You can check us out on the TuneIn Radio app. We also, of course, have a lot of replays available on TuneIn as well, so check that out. Replays available at Wrestling Observer Live as well. We are here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined by Mike Sempervivi, as always. And as promised before the break, in fact, Dana White revealed this week that a couple of years ago, WrestleMania 27, I believe, which had been 2 years ago, Vince McMahon contacted him and wanted to put together a supposed fight at WrestleMania, a Vince McMahon, Dana White fight that I guess would be the semi-main on a show that likely would have also included The Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar. And Dana White revealed that he had turned it down, said that Vince McMahon, and he noted Vince was not going to be happy to hear this, but he said Vince McMahon was too old to fight. It never took place, but Vince tried to make it happen. Mike, are you shocked to hear a story such as this?
No, not at all, especially because I remember that whole Brock Lesnar Undertaker thing. And if you're Vince, I mean, hey, you get to have Dana, you get to make money off of Dana White drawing him into your home. I actually asked Cranky Vince about this on Twitter, and well, you'd actually have to see his Twitter. I couldn't actually say those things on air when he responded to me wondering about Vince being too old to meet up with Dana White. But no, it doesn't really surprise me at all. And I wouldn't be shocked if down the line we hear it happen again, or at least hear it attempted to happen again from the WWE side.
This was the year they were trying to put together Undertaker Brock Lesnar. That obviously fell through. And for those of you wondering who would have won that match, I'll tell you after the break. Wrestling Observer Live! Here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at our website, WrestlingObserver.com. You can follow Mike and I on Twitter, at Sempervivi. That's Mike. At Brian Alvarez. That's me. In fact, we're going to be taking some Twitter questions later on here in the program. And yes, for those of you wondering, believe it or not, Dana White was going to win the proposed Vince McMahon-Dana White fight at WrestleMania 27. But Dana's still not down with the idea. But hey, they just They just gave it a shot. So let's get into the pro wrestling news here, since we're on the subject of WWE. WrestleMania is coming up, and we've got some matches, official or nearly official. Obviously, it is The Rock versus John Cena for the WWE title. It's Alberto Del Rio versus Jack Swagger for the world title. It is going to be likely, this could change, probably the Ryback against Mark Henry, as well as Randy Orton, Sheamus, and The Big Show against The Shield. Brock Lesnar versus Triple H is going to be set up with special stipulations on Raw tomorrow night. And yes, a card is beginning to come together. And Mike, what are your thoughts on Raw this past Monday night?
You know, it wasn't great throughout the whole thing, but I wasn't super down on it. I mean, there were some really good parts to it. I was really, really impressed, actually, in the way that they were able to pull off having a tribute to Paul Bearer and having two guys on the roster, including one of which was, you know, quote-unquote, rising from the dead again, you know, after a year and coming back. How they were able to tie all of that stuff together, still make it come off classy in wrestling terms. I know somebody from the outside would look at everything that happened on that show and just be probably appalled by the whole thing, much less Jerry Lawler saying how appalling it all was, even though his mother was used in an angle that was arguably far more appalling than this, you know, last year or 2 years ago, whatever it is now, with Michael Cole. I was very impressed by all that, and I thought they did just the right amount of it. And CM Punk and The Undertaker's, that was fantastic. Brock Lesnar coming out in the way that he did in the promo that Paul Heyman cut. I just thought, even though there were some down parts on some of the rest of the show, that stuff was so good that I came out of it with a big thumbs up.
You know, when Lance was on the show the other day, he was talking about the urn that CM Punk stole on Raw. And he said that his mother-in-law, I believe, maybe it was his mother, but an older gentlewoman, she was confused because she thought that Paul Bearer was actually in the urn. And I was like, no. But I don't know this to be a fact, but I do know that on the house shows this weekend, CM Punk has been coming out with the urn, and I got a report that they are, in fact, this person who was at the show thought they were trying to convince people that Paul Bearer was, in fact, in the urn. Yeah. So the storyline is continuing. I guess it is not a self-contained storyline for Raw. Apparently, when Punk stole the urn and took it with him, he's going to show up on Raw this coming Monday night with the urn. And Paul Bearer, his ashes, I don't know. But apparently, Paul Bearer is going to be involved in the storyline leading to WrestleMania, which, as I've mentioned now in about 8,000 shows on the website, I now firmly believe that some way, somehow, Paul Bearer is going to cost CM Punk the match at WrestleMania. What do you think is the possibility of this happening?
Yeah, I can't say no. I know I'm going to sound completely mental, to anyone who somehow stumbled upon this show who is not familiar with how pro wrestling works. I would assume Paul Bearer would get a grand kick out of this. I think you could do, again, as long as, you know, and Punk is so good and Paul Heyman is so good and The Undertaker is so good, you could have a story like this with these guys and not, you won't have the Eddie Guerrero's in hell sort of feeling that people get when it comes to this sort of stuff. And I know this sounds bizarre, but if you do that, The Undertaker wins at WrestleMania, and he has that one tribute where the urn, remember how the urn used to actually shoot light?
Yes.
You know, and they do something like that. I know how ridiculous this sounds, but that I could see in a very pro wrestling way being a pretty cool tribute for Paul Bearer. Now, do they need to do that? No. Could CM Punk just literally put the urn down this week and say, I don't even need this or whatever, however he's going to, you know, get out of it and start insulting people and, you know, you could do that too, but I'm not endorsing them using Paul Bearer in continuing on with this storyline. But to be honest, if the payoff is something that is such an over-the-top WrestleMania moment, would you stop and ask yourself and say, would Paul Bearer actually want that? Would that be that incredible of an end for, you know, not only Paul Bearer's character, but also, you know, really the end of The Undertaker, you know, or because we're getting to that point with him? I probably sound nuts, but if they did something like that and they did it in that sort of fashion, I couldn't actually complain about it.
So tomorrow on Raw, I guess we get the follow-up to this urn angle and also the stipulations for the Brock Lesnar versus Triple H match, which is going to be taking place at WrestleMania. The story is that Brock and Paul Heyman have accepted Triple H's challenge for a match at WrestleMania, but Brock gets to choose the stipulations, and they're not going to tell Triple H what the stipulations are until after he signs for the match. So basically, they're guilting Hunter into accepting these tips by saying, if you don't do this, then we're not going to accept the match, and you're going to let down all of the fans who want to see it. So apparently, and obviously this was a week ago, so God knows it may have changed 8,000 times, but the idea was that it was not going to be a mixed martial arts match, an MMA-style match.
Good.
You don't think that'd be good? Hunter's stand-up is unacceptable to you?
Look, there's a lot of you know, my mind I put to the side. I mean, John Cena and Brock Lesnar, just Triple H and Brock Lesnar brawling. You know, I don't need to see another MMA-style match or, you know, or that sort of thing where Triple H could even be competitive at all. I mean, I want to be able to chuck my brain, you know, but I can only chuck it for so far.
Well, what would you book for a stipulation? I mean, obviously, there's a million different matches. It'd have to be something. I don't know what kind of stipulation would be something that would be like, oh, no, Hunter's going to be in a pedigree is banned match. I mean, what would you have the stipulation be if you were putting the storyline together?
Well, I guess it can't be Hell in a Cell because you have a pay-per-view for that.
Amateur wrestling rules.
Would you say amateur wrestling rules?
Sure.
Oh, God. Again, that's another one where you can't even chuck your brain enough for that. I mean, you need Kurt Angle and Wes Briscoe in an amateur rules match would make more sense than that. I mean, it's got to be some sort of...
How about a plowing contest?
I was thinking of some jokes there, but what is a plowing contest?
You know, they'd both go out and they'd have to plow a field. Whoever got done first wins.
Again,
not that kind of plowing. Mike Sempervivi, how dare you say that on this program?
No,
you need kicked us off the air.
Hey, you know, a lot of it's satellite, you know, again.
Skeet shooting.
Texas Death.
Hunting.
Hunting?
A hunting contest.
You know what? That could be good. Then you could get Shawn Michaels coming back because, you know, Shawn Michaels is an incredible
star. Oh, my God. You just came up with the best idea I've ever heard of.
I mean, how fantastic is that?
Brock challenges Hunter to a hunting contest, and they go out and they have to shoot. We wouldn't have like a real animal, but maybe they have like a mechanical deer or something like that. And the finish is Hunter is behind, but him and Sean do the old switcheroo, and Sean shoots 8 electronic deer in the span of 13 seconds, and Hunter wins the match. Man, we should do a promotion together. I need to talk to Brian Kendrick, because he's got some ideas, too, I've heard, for his new promotion.
That would be right up his alley.
We're going to go to a break. When we come back, I'll let you tell me what the real stipulation should be, and I won't cut you off. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. That's right. We've been talking hunting on this show. I'm coming up with stipulations for Brock Lesnar versus Triple H. Anyway, Wrestling Observer Live here. We're here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, the Outdoor Channel. No. If we had to do a stipulation, Mike, for Triple H versus Brock Lesnar that didn't involve guns, farming, hunting, or amateur wrestling, or mixed martial arts, what would you come up with?
Texas Death? Again, some spin off of that. Some, you know, I don't want to do a last man standing match because they've had that before. I just don't know if you just don't do it bunkhouse style or something where it's just, I mean, Triple H is what his best chance in this would be is obviously having some sort of a fight with enough pro wrestling rules. And granted, you don't even have to overthink any of this, but it's just got to be something where they beat the living hell out of each other. And, you know, there's accidental blood. I don't, Triple H can't get fired himself.
How about first blood?
The problem with first blood is if this is supposed to be a blood feud and, you know, he beat up the old man and all that sort of stuff, I think, you know, and you've already had Brock Lesnar busted open with all of that blood. And again,
I guess Brock wouldn't suggest first blood since he's the only one who's bled this whole, that might be a problem.
Triple H, I mean, you know, the way Triple H has come out there and beaten it into the ground over that, you know, where you just sit there and bleed and Brock, you know, Paulie, I'll make you bleed first or something like that. I mean, I don't know. I just, to me, I would actually want blood for this. There's probably not going to be a whole lot of it because it's WrestleMania, but I think they both could pull off, you know, having that happen. It's either that or just have the straight wrestling match. Just have it under, you know, pro wrestling rules and...
Well, they can't really do that.
I guess he can because you've already announced the stipulation, but I don't know. No DQ.
What about Hell in a Cell?
I would love to have it be Hell in a Cell, but would they actually do that stipulation for, you know, when they already have a pay-per-view? To me, that's one of the best things they have, and I hate the fact that they have a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view because, again, you book yourself into a corner that way, but look at Brock Lesnar and The Rock. I mean, I know it's been a long time ago now, but the build-up to that was a pure sports build, quote-unquote, where Brock was just this young guy, this animal on the rise, and he went through Hulk Hogan, and he went through Triple H and all these other guys, and he hadn't gone through The Rock yet, and you have The Rock as the champion, and he's training harder than ever it was before because he's facing off against this guy coming up, and it was a great build, and it led to this match had to be, you know, special, and it, you know, it couldn't be contained in just a regular ring, and you had the cage. In a way, that's what Brock Lesnar and Triple H really should be, just with the extra added bonus that we're getting the fluffy gaga where, you know, Brock laid out Paul Heyman, and there's a family issue to this, and Paulie and Stephanie had already gotten into it. The only time you've seen Stephanie back was when she was tied in with Paul Heyman and saying, "Stop talking about my children." So that's what this should probably be. But again, do they use the gimmick just, you know, because they have the, it's going to be coming up later on in the year? Will they do it for this? I don't know. They probably should, though.
I got a stipulation.
All right.
I was going to leave a dramatic pause there before I gave it. No. Brock has broken Triple H's arm twice in storyline. So the stipulation is pinfalls only. So then Brock can say, "I tapped you out last time. This time, I'm going to break your arm and you can't quit. And then I'm going to break your other arm and you can't quit. And then I'm going to break your legs. And then I'm going to break your neck. And then I'm going to pin you." What about that?
I think that could work, although that reminded me of a Tully Blanchard promo talking about Dusty Rhodes, so Dusty would always yell out on TV that he was coming for you and he's going to break your legs, and he's going to break your arms, and he's going to break your head. And I don't know if that's how
there you go
would be leading up to that, but I don't know. I would actually be more apt to think it would be a submission match where, you know, because he's already broken his arm, that, you know, hey, I'll do it again, and, you know, you'll have to give up, you'll have to cry, and on the biggest stage for your company that you'll be taking over, I'm going to embarrass you by having you say I quit in the middle of your own ring.
I think they could work it where Hunter's already quit, you know what I mean? I think they could do a deal where you have the match, you have a back and forth battle, that sort of thing, and then bam, Brock gets him in the Kimura, and they sell it like he broke Triple H's arm again. Triple H can't lose by submission. He can't quit. And so Triple H with a broken arm has to keep fighting. And somehow you give him the big pinfall victory, and he can put over the fact that I not only beat you, but I beat you with a broken arm. He gets his big revenge, gets his vengeance. Of course, that does obviously, you know, lead to an issue if you actually want to do The Rock versus Brock Lesnar next year, in which case Hunter really shouldn't win this match, particularly if he's only going to be wrestling a couple of times a year. But, hey, they booked themselves into a corner. So if Hunter's going to go over, and if you read the Grantland article a couple of days ago when they did the unwritten rule book of WWE, Hunter always wins the blow-off. I think he's winning. I'm not saying I think he should win. I think for business purposes, if Brock is staying around for another year with big matches, he should win. But I don't see Brock Lesnar breaking Triple H's arm once, breaking his arm and submitting him at WrestleMania, and then going on to beat him a third time at WrestleMania. It's not going to happen with Hunter. It's just not going to happen, you know? But maybe I'm wrong.
Can we get Paul Heyman in like a cage suspended, like it was 80s style, like 15 feet above the ring, or get maybe like Vince and Paulie, and if Hunter does win, then Vince gets 5 minutes with Paulie, and he just absolutely kills him.
We could. I don't expect it. Now, another question for you, your opinion on this. The Jack Swagger, Alberto Del Rio program. Originally, this was going to continue past WrestleMania. They were going to do a submission match at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, which would lead one to think that probably Jack Swagger would win the title at WrestleMania, and then maybe Alberto Del Rio would win it back via submission at Extreme Rules. There's been talk internally in WWE over the past couple of weeks that, hey, this ain't getting over. Alberto isn't over as a babyface like we want. Here and there at house shows, Jack Swagger's getting a lot of heat, but on television, nobody cares. And there's been a lot of talk of killing the storyline off at WrestleMania. What does your gut tell you they're going to do? Is this going to continue, or are they just going to squash it at Mania?
No, I think they'll probably kill it at Mania if it keeps up like this. I mean, it was not one of the brighter points of Raw. Now, I thought the skit that they did, that they actually had shown on SmackDown, I don't know. It didn't really work for me, and there were chance of boring during the whole, you know, the Zeb Coulter speech. It just, you know, it doesn't. I don't think they're going to be able to go further than WrestleMania with this. I really don't. I think they should probably blow it off there, unless, again, I haven't been to a house show. They'll be coming down here right before WrestleMania, so I'll probably go to that. And I guess I'll get to see it for myself, but it's not coming across well on TV. And it's, you know, I guess in a way it's too bad because Dutch Mantel's been really good, and Jack Swagger is a guy that I've liked for a while. And, you know, he comes back to this, and, you know, again, Alberto Del Rio is not, to me, faring all that great in this whole thing either. And to me, the easiest thing to do, especially, and you can do this in New York, and, you know, people like Alberto Del Rio enough now, if they just take care of it then and Del Rio wins and maybe it's a really good match and Swagger beats the hell out of him, I think it'll be a big pop if Del Rio wins. And I don't know if you do lose or leaves the country or put some sort of stipulation on it like that. But still, I mean, you could even do that and have the submission match and just get it out of the way there. And then you have Del Rio and Dolph Ziggler or you have something like that. But unless this thing really catches fire, and I don't know if it really will in the next couple of weeks, I would just go ahead and kill it off then. Why continue to drag this out further and hear boring chants and just not have it really get across or have it fall into some, you know, goofy preliminary gimmick?
Let's talk a little bit about lockdown. I got a lot of stuff to get into here on the program, and lockdown was this past Sunday night. And Bully Ray, the new TNA World Heavyweight Champion, if anybody deserves whatever championships are here in 2013, it is Bully Ray. What were your thoughts on lockdown and the follow-up on Impact?
I really thought they were both really good. You know, and they weren't, you know, phenomenal or anything like that, but it was better than I thought it was going to be because, you know, we talked about it last week on the show. The opener was what the opener was. It was a three-way with X Division guys, you know, two of which being Kenny King and Zema Ion, and, you know, they don't exactly hit everything all the time, but it could have been a lot worse. Kenny King gets the wing and retains, and no surprise there. And then we got the surprise match of Joe Park and Joey Ryan. And, you know, again, for what that was, I thought it was good. And then the show was not phenomenal by any means or anything like that. But you're right. The Aries Rude match against Bad Influence and Chavo and Hernandez, as much as I thought Chavo and Hernandez would kind of maybe drag that match down a little bit, not at all. It was really the best match on the show. And, you know, there were a couple of big spots during it that went well, even though they looked terrifying. And, you know, Bully Wade, Jeff Hardy wasn't as good as I had hoped it was going to be. But I got a good feeling coming out of that show. And then the live Impact in Chicago, that, again, them traveling around, if they can get good crowds like that, that are loud, and they can make them look as good as they do, because they make them look great. To me, it's a massive step forward. And Hulk Hogan with promos on both shows, as goofy as it is, I mean, he's still Hulk Hogan when he wants to be, and he cut some really awesome promos on both of those shows.
Bully Ray has just been getting some amazing heat on the house shows. We're going to talk a little bit more about this after the break. Old school heel heat here in 2013. Back in a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next about 20 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out, the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, the TuneIn Radio app. Search Sports Byline USA. Listen to all of the awesome programming. Also, check us out at WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates up there at WrestlingObserver.com. And if you like this show, that is the place to go for, I almost said, unlimited audio. It's not unlimited. There is a limit. But, my God, we got a lot of audio up there on the website. Every single show we've ever done dating back to 2005 is available on the website. If you head up there right now as a subscriber, $10.99 a month gets you full access to everything. We do 2 to 3 new shows every single day. I'm trying to do one show in the morning, one show at night, and a 10-minute afternoon update Monday through Friday. And then on the weekends after pay-per-views, myself and Dave Meltzer do shows as well. That's a lot of audio. If you like this show, Wrestling Observer Live, and you only get to hear it one time per week, you are missing out. Sign up, $10.99, and dip into the archives. Your $10.99 gets you full access to everything, not only audio, but the brand new Wrestling Observer newsletters, Figure Four weekly newsletter, back issues of both newsletters available on the website. There's more stuff than you could ever get through. So check it out. We got a lot of samples up at WrestlingObserver.com. And like I said, try it out for a month, and if you don't like it, never have to try it again. But I think if you like this show, you're going to end up being a subscriber for life. There's a lot of great stuff up there, so check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking TNA Lockdown, Mike, and we had the Impact show on Thursday night. A great crowd in Chicago at the Sears Center. They are going on the road. They're out of the Impact Zone. No more shows at the Impact Zone, except for their taped shows, their taped pay-per-views, which they're about to start taping through February, actually. A lot of evergreen shows. Do you think that this momentum can continue in the sense that they went on the road for the first big TV taping? Actually, they've done TV tapings on the road before, but the first of this new series did a great crowd at the Sears Center. Can they keep this up, or is it going to be diminishing returns as the weeks go by?
I think they can keep it up because it depends on what buildings they're booking. I mean, as long as you have a television-friendly building, you can kind of tweak it and make it look like, you know, whatever you want it to look like. Obviously, it's not going to be like WWE style, but they've done a very good job, you know, being able to film their product and making it look pretty, especially the England shows. And the England shows are a little bit, you know, different because the crowd is so massive and they have so much room to work with. But, you know, Chicago was a good example of, you know, it wasn't a massive crowd or anything like that, but they accentuated it great. And again, I think it's just a distinct look every week, you know, changing it up because they were in the Impact Zone for so long. I think it will work to their advantage, and I think they can keep it up because they don't have to run massive buildings or anything like that. they can run, you know, smaller 7,000, 8,000 seat buildings. And again, you know, at maximum, and be able to pull it off and control it where it looks actually good.
I'm really enjoying a lot of TNA of late. I've liked the I like where they're going, believe it or not, with Aces and Eights. And I was a big detractor in terms of Aces and Eights for a long, long time. Bully Ray has just injected life into this storyline. And I'm interested to see where it goes. It looks like most likely it's going to be AJ Styles versus Bully Ray, probably at Bound for Glory for the World Heavyweight Championship. AJ Styles playing the Sting role from 1996, 1997. And I guess we'll see how it goes. But for the time being, I like where they're going. There's obviously a lot of emphasis on Hulk Hogan, probably too much since we're not getting that match. But hey, we'll see where they go. I had no faith for a long time. And while it has not been perfect, it's turned out better than I expected. So I'm going to give them some time and see where they go. But so far, so good.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, I mean, if he keeps cutting promos again like he did with Bully Ray on Sunday and then against Sting, you know, kind of blaming him for, you know, I told you this was going to happen all along, and now, you know, look at where you put my family in and all that sort of stuff. I mean, yeah, it's fantastic. And AJ Styles is probably going to be that guy it would make the most sense to. It just, I guess, is a matter of how long it's also going to take. I guess it will be it could be the next pay-per-view. They could wait till the pay-per-view after that, too. Just depending on who they could build up. Unfortunately, you know, guys like James Storm have been put in, you know, such a poor position that they can't drag this out for longer, because I've liked Bully, you know, the Bully Ray was so good and the stuff with Hogan has been so good that I really wish, unfortunately, they could have dragged this out a little bit longer. If there's ever any, you know, if I could say there's a problem with them only dropping to four pay-per-views, you know, for this specific thing, it's too bad that that's what happened, because I think they could have actually dragged this out of a couple more pay-per-views, you know, had people build up into, you know, wondering if and when Bully was going to turn and been able to do it that way. It's just, you know, but again, I cannot complain, because in the last couple of weeks, he's been good for, you know, a couple of years now anyway, and has been, you know, the horse in the underrated MVP of that company. But I wish they could have dragged this out for just a little bit longer.
All right, we're going to do some Twitter questions here. New thing I'm trying here on the program. I'll send out tweets here and there telling you, the listener, when we're going to be taking these questions. Also, when we are taking phone calls as well. So if you want to be involved with the show, follow me on Twitter at Brian Alvarez and get those tweets sent to your phone. I don't tweet an awful lot, but if we're going to be taking calls or if I'm accepting questions for the program, I will send that information out on Twitter at Brian Alvarez. So we're going to do a couple of those in just a second. But first off, Mike, since we don't talk about it much, give me your review of Saturday Morning Slam.
I didn't have the chance to see a whole lot of it this morning, but at least a couple days ago, I got to see the part that I really wanted to see, which was Booker T coming out and naming the new general manager of Saturday Morning Slam. And Heath Slater was on commentary, and he was hoping it was him. And there's been a lot of guys anywhere, and, you know, guys, Cody Rhodes to Darren Young to Natalya. Everybody wants to be the Saturday Morning Slam general manager, but the decision was made. It ended up being Mick Foley, and Daniel Bryan came out with a very interesting hairdo, kind of pressed to the side, all you know, matted down on his head, except for one little curly cue that went over his eyebrow. And then Dolph Ziggler came out with Biggie Langston and AJ, where they seem to be doing their best work. The Money in the Bank briefcase holder is on Saturday Morning Slam kicking ass, which he can't even say ass on that show because it's a show aimed at kids. But they were very unhappy with the fact that Mick Foley got to be the general manager of the show. But then he booked a match between Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler, which I'm sure was very good. But I haven't seen the whole thing yet. So a more full report next week on the show, catching you up with not only this show, but with the happenings of next week's Saturday Morning Slam as well.
Fabulous. I have watched that show one time, and I enjoyed it, but not enough to ever watch it again. But we'll talk about it here on the show.
I'm sorry. I'll take, you know, I know Raw is the show we all got to watch and everything, but I could actually handle a week of main event because it's going to tell me everything that's happening on Raw anyway, and I'm going to get a match that's probably going to be pretty good, and I'll take Impact, and I'll take Saturday Morning Slam, and you could probably have the rest of it.
All right, Twitter question time. We're taking these at Brian Alvarez. And as noted, follow me, and you'll find out when you can send in questions as well. This person wants to know, what are your thoughts on Nick Diaz if he happens to test positive for marijuana? Do you think Dana White will actually cut him?
No, but I can see him giving him a long suspension and Nick basically quitting over it.
Really?
And then being contentious about it and then probably coming back at some point.
I think if he fails a test, he's out of here. I really do. So we'll see. Hopefully he doesn't. He did apologize at the pre-fight press conference. He said he apologized in advance if he failed. He tried harder this time. But, you know, things happen. He thought he tried hard last time, and he was... I think he claimed he was like, I was over by like a nanogram. He doesn't even know what the hell's going on. But he was over. He doesn't think he'll be over this time, but if he is, he's sorry. He'll be sorry, all right, if he fails that thing. This person here says... Let's see. Who else do you see being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this year? Do you expect Paul Bearer to go in? Because I think there is a decent possibility that will happen.
Yeah, I'd be all for that. And it would make the most sense, too. I think that would actually be really cool if he went in. I don't know who else could go in, but I would hope they kind of stop because it's really hard to compete with this class. I mean, with everybody that's in it, I mean, Mick Foley is taking a huge backseat. To the other people going in now, and in a way that's kind of too bad. And I think, you know, in this case, less is better. There's so many of these that they're going to have where they're going to have to fill names. I mean, they could stop now and be completely fine. Just the additional Paul Bearer, I think, would be cool, but that's enough.
Mike here says, and he says this is a serious question, do you think Joe Park will win the Bound for Glory series and beat Bully Ray? I don't, but I know why you ask. Because this whole thing started when Bully Ray killed Abyss, apparently. And that was the birth of the character of Joe Park. And yes, it would come full circle if at the end of the day, Joe Park was the one who ran off Bully Ray, either as Joe Park or revealing that he's in fact Abyss and then beating Bully Ray. But I actually... I don't think that's going to happen. But who knows? Maybe that's where they're going, and they're slowly building towards that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think I want that because I want Joe Park more involved in, you know, moving up the card a little bit. But, you know, to do something like that, I want some more comedy out of him. That's what one of his best things is, and you don't need comedy in the main event.
This person here says, Eric here, how do you guys feel Chris Jericho's been used in the WWE for his 2013 return?
It's fine. To me, it's fine. I look at it from Jericho's point of view. I'm just happy to have him there. I'm happy to have him back. He has good matches. He wants to help guys while he's there, and he's entertaining, and you know you can rely on him, so... and he still has got his band and other stuff to do, so I don't expect him to come in and be world champion or compete for any of that stuff. As long as he's happy, I'm happy because it's good to see him.
What do you think about the idea of a Chris Jericho versus Fandango match at WrestleMania?
I think Chris Jericho could make that funny, could make it entertaining. He did the Dancing with the Stars bit. You could have that lead up into it, and would it be good? No. Would it be the greatest use of Jericho? No. Would it probably be as entertaining as you could do with Fandango and somebody? Yeah. So you got a lot of serious matches on the card that you haven't built up great. If you just want a mindless one that's going to be goofy and entertaining, sure, I'm fine with that.
You know, a quick note here before we go to the break. There has been a bit of change on the creative team. Eric Penkowski, who was the head of creative, was released, and there have been a lot of changes to the undercard the planned undercard for WrestleMania. If you've been following the website, this radio show, our newsletters, you'll notice that the top of the card matches your Rock Cena, your Undertaker, CM Punk, your Brock Lesnar, Triple H. These matches were set in stone a long time ago, and they have not changed. However, a lot of the undercard matches are different than they were even a month ago. Jericho was originally going to face Ryback as a heel. Chris Jericho turning heel. You'll note that they were looked like they were going towards a Ryback heel turn after Royal Rumble. A lot of stuff changed right after Rumble. So undercard is still in disarray, and it's caused disarray on the writing team as well. So we'll talk about this more after the break. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here on WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and of course streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And a lot of changes on the creative team in WWE, a lot of changes to the undercard at WrestleMania. And I guess the question to the obvious question, Mike, is does it matter what's on the undercard at WrestleMania? I mean, I presume that most people would feel that everyone's buying for the top couple matches, and the rest of it is largely just gravy.
Yes and no. I mean, because of what WrestleMania is, as long as you have, you know, the 2 to 3, you know, basically have, like, do the 3 main event thing on it, as long as you have a couple of big names, yeah. If there's a, you know, a time where there is no Undertaker, there's no Triple H, there's no Brock, there's no Rock, there's no Foley to come back, there's no Jericho, and all you have, and if they're still in the position of having just Sheamus, just Orton, and just John Cena, you know, and CM Punk truly over, then, you know, when it comes to that time, then you're going to have a stacked card of good matches, I think, to really make it feel like WrestleMania. But when you have like Brock and Triple H this year, when you have The Undertaker and Punk, when you have Rock, Cena too, and you're going to be in New York, and I honestly, on this one, even though I'm not saying it's right, you can kind of get away with having a bunch of nonsense on the card. It's not going to be looked back on very well or anything like that, but you could have your Jericho Fandango match on here and be okay.
All right, everybody, we are out of time, but WrestlingObserver.com is a place to go for more. This coming week, shooting for 3 shows every single day. Show in the morning, show at night, and a 10-minute afternoon update every single day. And we're going to have a very big guest on Wrestling Observer Radio on Monday. That's all I'm going to say about that. But check it out tomorrow. WrestlingObserver.com might be a good time to sign up. We got a lot of stuff coming up for WrestleMania as well. A lot of live reports from the event. So check it out. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Mike, as always. Everyone at Sports Byline. Talk to you next week. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.